They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, you're on the Commons, and joining us today we have Deborah Goonan. Deborah lives in Florida. She used to live in an HOA, but she's one of the lucky ones who managed to get away. She flew the coop. And unlike most people who manage to get out of an HOA, and they literally get out of it, they forget all about it, and they totally ignore it. Deborah, on the other hand, has been amazing because she started doing a ton of research. And she started blogging and writing about it. And I've been reading the stuff that she's written, and I was really, really impressed, totally impressed. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. Your stuff has been amazing. I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got to tell us today.
Thank you, Sue. I'm glad to talk to you about various things that I've been researching and finding out about HOA land and homeowner association life. Most of it I've actually discovered since I have moved out of the HOA, if you can believe that or not. Two things prompted me to start digging into HOA land and all of the myths. One was, in Florida, almost every home that you want to buy happens to be in an HOA. So even though I've moved out of an HOA, it's very difficult to find something else that would not be in an HOA. And I was wondering, why is that? The second thing is that I felt that I could use my gifts and talents best to help others by educating them. What is HOA living all about? What are the pros and the cons and the pitfalls? And that's where we'll leave it for now, and then we'll discuss further.
Well, the pitfalls, you know, I think one of the biggest pitfalls, and I think one of the biggest problems we have, is the fact that there's so little understanding of what an HOA really is.
Right.
People have been told that HOAs protect property values. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that is not a myth. That is a big, fat lie.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that.
They don't. If you knew, and then the other thing that we're told is that if you have a problem, they're just isolated incidents. Well, I have to tell you, Deborah, I get a lot of isolated incidents calling me because they have nowhere else to turn. And they don't understand what's going on. You came up with a list. You wrote, by the way, for my listeners, I sent Deborah an email after I read her stuff, and I said, Deborah, can you come up with something to debunk a lot of the myths that are being put out, primarily by the Community Associations Institute, CAI? I mean, they come up with these phenomenal annual surveys that mean absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
And she said, well, give me some time. So she came up with this incredible paper with three myths.
And I've asked her if I can put this on my website. I've sent it to my husband, who is my webmaster. So you will be able to go online on my website, onthecommons.us, and you will be able to read everything she's written here. And I know that you're going to be just as impressed as I am, because we're not going to be able to cover everything in an hour.
Absolutely not.
But I'm going to turn it over to you, Deborah. Myth number one, and you say CAI represents homeowners and residents in HOAs.
I find this to be one of the largest myths that is perpetuated by CAI. They keep publishing in all of their news releases that they represent homeowners and, you know, they want to make vibrant homeowners associations. And, I guess they present this same sort of information on the legislative level when they either propose particular types of legislation or oppose owner-friendly legislation. Look, we have 33,000 members, and 40% of them are homeowner leaders. But what that really means, homeowner leaders are the board members who represent the interests of the corporate HOA. That's not the members themselves. People need to realize that the HOA is actually a corporation and a separate entity.
You know what CAI has also said?
Mm-hmm.
Or what some CAI members have said. I actually attended one of their law seminars some years ago, and one of the presenters said that the board members are the parents and the homeowners are the children, and the children don't know what's good for them. They don't know what they want. You deal with the parents, with the board members. Of course, the board members are handpicked by management because they're very malleable.
Well, even more than that, Shu, during the first 7 to 10 years, sometimes even longer than that, the developer appoints the board. One of the things that CAI will keep saying is, oh, the members elect their board, the members elect their board. We have some HOAs in the state of Florida that have developer-appointed boards for 1, 2, even 3 decades. You know, if you want to Google Metro West Orlando, for example, they just bought out their developer for $2.5 million after 30 years. You look at Poinciana, Florida, that's another community that's seeking to possibly incorporate itself into a city so that they can get away from just a handful of people out of 40,000 residents that vote as the board for everything that goes on in their very large HOA. But even if you look at their membership and they say, CAI says, we have 33,000 members, 40% of them are homeowner leaders, they're really board members, let's do the math. That's 13,200 people that are CAI members that are board members. And CAI estimates there's about 64 million residents. Now, if you do the math, you know, go back and do your math that you learned back in grade school, that's like less than 0.1%.
Okay, guys, that's why I love Deborah. You've heard exactly why. She goes right to the heart of the matter and says, come on, guys. You're lying.
Yes, and the other thing is, when they were created in 1973, it was a joint effort of FHA, NAHB, which is the National Association of Home Builders, Urban Land Institute, and they also list in their information, and all of this is referenced in the paper that you'll be posting, Shu. They referenced leaders from other associations. It's unclear who those were, and public officials. So there were 5 interest groups. And at the time of the 5 interest groups, each interest group had an equal weight or equal power in the initial board. However, even at best, that means that homeowner representation was only maybe 20% at best. fast forward to today. Today there is a board of trustees consisting of 14 members, only two of which are homeowner members. So that's what, maybe a 14% interest in the board of trustees. And the other members of the board of trustees are mostly community association management leaders, people who are very prominent in the real estate industry. You have a few people that represent financial institutions, large insurance companies, and a couple of high-powered attorneys. And many of these people have been on the boards for quite a few years. They've been active either in the committee or at the board level for quite a long time. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with
But going back to the five groups, and the reason CAI was set up, and you're not going to find that in too many places, but the reason CAI was set up was to get government-backed financing, FHA, right. VA loans, because without it, the concept of HOAs would not survive, because if people couldn't get loans, they would not, you know, they would not be able to sell them. And if you had to rely, in those days you had to have, and I don't know what you need now, but a 20% down payment for a conventional loan. So they looked at that and they decided, hey, that's just not going to work. That's why one of the interest groups was the government.
Right.
And you have the developers, and you have the managers, and you have the homeowners, but the homeowners in the form of the board members. And you also had the associates. Now, the associates were the attorneys, because there were no large legal firms in those days. I mean, they've just really, really made a meal of this whole thing to the tune of $65 billion a year, which is ridiculous.
Well, right now, on the current Board of Trustees, three of them are attorneys. Two are homeowners. The rest are all management, CEOs of management companies, basically.
The bigwigs.
Yeah, yeah.
The people who have an interest in continuously digging, feeding off at the trough of the homeowners.
And the interesting thing, when you mention the FHA loans, I just recently read an article that said something like only 30% of condominiums are able to be approved for FHA loans these days after the large crash in the real estate market.
Right.
Of course, you know, there's a lot more restrictions now as to who can get financing. And CAI has been working fervently with the FHA to get them to relax those guidelines so that they can sell more condominiums. But what they've done is they've just extended their guidelines for another 2 years to kind of give themselves a little bit of time to figure out whether they're going to relax the guidelines or keep them kind of strict, you know, so that people are somewhat limited as to being able to finance certain projects. And it mostly affects condominiums more so than homeowners associations or people on the lower end of the income scale and the price range of houses.
The first rung of homeownership.
Right.
And I think that's a good idea, because there was a period where we were just pushing people into homeownership, whether they could afford it or not, whether they were comfortable with it or not. And there's nothing more demoralizing than thinking that you've reached the American goal only to find the rug pulled out from under you, because financially you really cannot support it.
Right.
And if you get into a condominium where you've got a group of your neighbors, basically, who are managing the facilities, and especially if you're lower end, you know, the beginning rungs.
Right.
You've got people who have no knowledge, who just don't have the education it takes to decide whether or not the roof needs to be replaced, to decide whether or not
You know, the balconies need to be fixed. You're not structural engineers, you're not financial wizards, you're not this, you're not that, and you're dealing with millions of dollars and making stupid decisions.
And most people were renters for years, and therefore they know nothing about owning a home. And when they move from an apartment to a condominium, especially, it feels like you're still living in an apartment in some ways. But now, all of a sudden, as the owner of that space, you have additional responsibilities to take care of your particular space, plus all the shared expenses that you're sharing with people who don't know really what they're doing.
I'm not going to say anything negative about the board members because some of them are very, very nice.
Absolutely.
So for those of you who are sitting there doing the best job you can, I understand. I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was a board member. I know nothing about building roads, and yet I was making a decision as to whether or not to build a road, resurface or totally mill down and redo the road. The experts I had were the people who were going to be doing the work and getting the money.
That's correct.
And so I understand for those of you, you're in an untenable situation. I mean, there's nothing, I'm not holding it against you. Some of you are disastrous. Some of you are really pieces of garbage. And so I'm not going to mince any words there. But the majority of you are really caring, conscientious people, but you've been put in a position where you just can't get out of it. It's unfair to you because the system is flawed.
Right.
Do you agree, Deborah?
I agree with that. You're basically taking, let's say, road maintenance. I lived in a very large HOA where we had private roads and like over 60 retention ponds. So this was a lot for a board to know how to maintain. And we did have a property manager. But really, these are duties that used to fall onto municipalities and counties. They have engineers.
Yes.
They have traffic engineers, structural engineers, people who know about environmental impact of stormwater runoff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're sitting on the board of directors of one of these HOAs, you don't have any of this information at your disposal or any of these experts at your disposal. Like you said, the only expert you can really consult is maybe your property manager and the contractor who's going to be doing the work. And for some reason, it becomes difficult to choose the right contractor, or if maybe you think that you're picking a good contractor or somebody that knows what they're doing and maybe they don't, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. So I agree.
I keep wanting to go back to whether this is a feasible way of running a business, running a home, or have we just thrown residential America under a bus? And I think we have.
Yeah, it's just not realistic because you're expecting people who are volunteering their time, who come from all walks of life, and you know, like maybe like if I was a school teacher in my past life, or a postal worker in my past life, now all of a sudden I have to decide what I should do about the roads that are crumbling.
You could be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist, and what the hell
do you know? That's right. If it's not your area of expertise, even if you're a medical doctor for years, if that's not your area of expertise, and one advantage of if you're working on city council, for example, you have all of these experts that are at your disposal. They have the staff, they have the equipment. That's another problem with a lot of these smaller associations. How do they hire the help to do these large-scale jobs? It's very expensive, and a lot of the larger contractors that have this big equipment don't want to take a small job.
Yeah,
right?
You're right, because it takes a lot of money to bring all that equipment on site and to haul it away, so it just adds to the expense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're saying is that it's really not a feasible, it's not a sustainable way of living.
It's not, Sue, I agree with you. You're asking people to do the impossible.
So let's move on. We have three big myths. And myth number two, one of my favorites. Thank you so much for including this one, Deborah, that HOAs are up close and personal form of democracy.
Oh, that is the biggest crock that I've ever heard. I'm going to just quote from some of CAI's documentation.
Okay.
They have a document available for their community association leaders that's called Community Association Living. And on one page, they start talking about community associations as being a form of democracy. And there it says, quote, "Community associations are one of the most representative and responsive forms of democracy in America today. Residents of a community freely elect neighbors to serve on a board of directors of the community. Numerous other owners or residents serve on committees and help with special tasks as they arise." Well, now let's do a little reality check, okay? One hallmark of democratic governance is free, competitive elections. And as I just mentioned to you earlier, during the initial stage of any HOA or condominium project, the developer appoints the board and everybody who's on a committee. And that period can last 7 years, 10 years, even decades, because one of the things that will happen is as the community starts to grow, and this is more of a problem with planned unit developments than standalone condominium projects, but what will happen is the developer will acquire the land in phases. So just when you're reaching a point of, say, maybe 75% ownership control where there might be a turnover, as they're approaching that, the developer goes out and acquires or annexes another piece of land to create more homes. And in doing that, it then changes the ratio of ownership to developer control. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so then that extends the period of developer control. Then there is the other fact that many associations do not allow residents who are not owners to participate in elections, which is very different from a democracy, right? When you go to vote in a presidential election or a state election or a local election, any resident who's registered to vote can vote. It doesn't matter whether you rent a home or you own a home. As long as you're over 18 years old and you're registered to vote, you can vote. Not so in community associations. Your vote is based upon, usually you have to be a title holder, although there are some associations that will allow you to allow your tenant to vote in your place. However, one of the key differences is that in a homeowners association or a condominium association, typically the vote is allocated one vote per unit owned. So if you own five units, you get five votes. If you own 50 units, you get 50 votes. If you own 250 units, you get 250 votes. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do.
It's the more you own of the corporate, you kind of own more shares of the corporation, and therefore you have more control over the direction of the corporation because your votes count more than the person who has one vote who owns one property. Do you think that's democratic?
Add to the fact that in a condominium they have weighted votes. So
right.
If you have a bigger unit, you have more of a vote, a higher percentage of the vote. The rationale there being that you own more, you have a bigger stake in it, you ought to have a bigger say in it. But I think one of the worst things that we have is the fact that in a lot of governing documents, you can be denied the right to vote.
That's correct.
And there was a story out of Texas some years ago where the manager knew that certain people would vote against what the manager wanted. So right before the election, the manager sent out all of these violation notices. You didn't have to be in violation. You didn't have to have an unapproved hose sitting in your yard. But as long as you got a letter, you were deemed to be in violation. Therefore, you were disenfranchised. You could not vote. And so that was another way of controlling the vote.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's against the Constitution, right?
And there's no...
You can't have... there's not supposed to be a poll tax or any reason for denying someone the right to vote. The only exception is if you're a convicted felon. And even then, you can regain the right to vote after having done your time. And, you know, whatever the allotted period of time is after that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that, but in an HOA, no, forget it. If they think that you're going to vote against them, it's the board, the sitting board that sort of controls that. It's the manager who has a vested interest in ensuring that the right people get elected. It's the attorney who's there helping them manipulate the elections.
Yes.
Awesome. All right.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. We have hoping that we're going to get a new hybrid here. Anyway, so that there goes the myth of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Homeowners are kept out of meetings. They're not allowed to talk during meetings. How can you have a democracy if you're not allowed to talk?
Exactly. You're only allowed to talk in Florida. We're only allowed to talk for 3 minutes. And then only if you sign, you know, usually the board will say, well, you have to fill out a sign-up sheet, you know, before you can talk and...
Get permission, you know, to talk.
for permission to talk, or they'll say, okay, well, time, you know, if time permits, we'll have a comment period. I mean, technically the statute says that they have to allow... owners the opportunity to talk. They can't just say, well, now we ran out of time. But there's enough gray area in the statute whereby they say, well, the board can, you know, they can draw up reasonable rules about participation and how long people can speak. And so that's how they tend to get around it. There's just so many myths. The other issue with regard to voting is that during the developer control period, the developer has 3 to 9 votes per lot,
mm-hmm,
or unit owned. And that can continue for a very long time. Again, it goes back to the inequitable vote. Another hallmark of democratic governance is freedom of speech, the press, and religion, but we all know that that HOAs often limit all three. For example, you know, you may not be able to put out certain religious objects or certain holiday decorations on your front door, or if so, it would have to be restricted by size and the time that you can put it there. Only certain flags can be flown. If you wanted to publish an opinion or something in your newsletter, of course, there is no editorial section in most HOA newsletters, if they even publish a newsletter. And then the other thing is there's, in a democracy, even though the majority vote will win, the minorities in this country still have some rights that are respected. Not so in the HOA. If a rule is made and the majority of 51% say they want it a certain way, the other 49% better obey, or if they don't, they will probably receive a violation notice and a fine or have access taken away from the amenities. To me, that does not sound democratic.
One of the big ones is they're going to take away your parking space. And
They do. And the hardship that this has caused for mothers with young children,
right,
babies and small children and a carload of groceries that are not allowed to park on the properties,
mm-hmm.
I think that ought to be illegal. I had an 80-year-old gentleman who there was some, I can't remember what the deal was. There was some dispute. So the little pipsqueaks on the board and the manager decided that they were going to take away his parking spot. He had a disabled wife. He was, like I said, over 80. It does snow and it does get cold here. And in the winter, he could drop his wife off, make sure she got in the house. And then he had to go and park over a mile away and walk back in the snow and the ice. Because those little nasty people. I honestly, I cannot think of anything else to call them but nasty people. Where on earth is their humanity?
I don't know, Shu. I really don't know. You reminded me of another case here in Florida where there was a homeowner. He was delinquent on his assessments, and he was delinquent on the assessments quite a bit. But one of the new techniques that's being tried here is in gated communities to stop you at the gate. Instead of going through the resident gate, you'll have to stop by the visitor gate every single time that you want to be let in and out of your own community. But worse than that, what they did in this case was anyone who came to visit this owner who was delinquent was stopped at the gate. And they had to basically park their car at the gate, and the owner was called and had to come and get them and escort them to his house. Even if they were family members or friends, which I could hardly believe. Again, definitely not democratic.
One of the isolated incidents that I remember from a while back was this guy who said that, I just don't understand the mentality of these people. But there was a dispute, and it may have been because he owed money. It may have been because he disputed the fact that he owed money. It may have been because he was fined for some who knows what issue that mm-hmm. came up. But the way the board decided to punish him was to have these huge concrete barriers placed in front of his garage. So he couldn't take the car out. His wife's car was stuck inside. His car was stuck outside.
I remember seeing that. I remember reading about that and seeing it on the video.
It's like, what on earth? What are you people thinking?
It's like going back to kindergarten almost.
It's not even going back to kindergarten. They wouldn't be that obnoxious. 5-year-olds are not that obnoxious.
True. That's true.
I mean, what possesses these people to do such idiotic things is so totally beyond me.
Mm.
So anyway, it's a form of democracy, right? You get to decide. And so then you get the manager. You know, maybe the manager had Cousin Luigi. I mean, we like picking on Cousin Luigi because Cousin Luigi has this concrete business. Needed to be able to get, I don't know. We're talking to Deborah Goonan, and you're on the Commons, and I'm Shu Bartholomew. Now, there's another myth, Deborah, and I love this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite all the problems we've been talking about for the last half hour plus,
mm-hmm.
CAI comes out with these annual or biannual surveys to assure us that everybody is happy in an HOA.
They're so happy. You know, these are isolated incidents. It just doesn't happen. They must have done something to deserve that, right? I mean, don't you hear that all the time?
I hear it all the time. And, you know, I have myself somewhat involved in several discussion forums on community association issues, and I run into a lot of CAI members who happen to be either attorneys or managers, and to be fair, some of them are very nice and very professional, but some of them, they are very argumentative, and they sometimes get very defensive in these discussions, and one of the first things that they throw out is this survey that says,
I know.
I mean, and here's the most recent news release that claims, quote, more than 65 million Americans who make their homes in condominiums and homeowners associations are overwhelmingly satisfied with their communities. According to a national survey conducted by Public Opinion Strategies for the Foundation for Community Association Research. Well, you know, Sue, as well as I do, the Foundation for Community Association Research is basically a sister organization to CAI, and it's funded by voluntary contributions of members. When you decide that you want to be a member of CAI, you can add an additional $15 to $25 to your membership. I think it's a little higher than that for group organization memberships. And they use that money to defray the costs of doing these surveys. That's really basically what most of their research is, the surveys and gleaning information for their fact book, most of it coming from census. But the amazing thing with the biggest question that they ask here is, I requested a copy of the actual management report that is behind the publicly released survey.
Ah.
Okay. So the actual question asked of individuals who responded to the survey was, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being very bad and 5 being very good, how would you rate your overall experience living in a community association? Well, 25% rated 5, 39% rated 4. That's where they get the total of 64%. 26% rated 3 for neutral. In other words, it didn't matter to them one way or the other. And 10% expressed outright dissatisfaction. So when you look at that and compare it to the paragraph that I just read to you about overwhelming satisfaction, since when does 64% positive rating indicate overwhelming satisfaction? If you were going to grade your child at school and they came home with a 64%, that would be a D, right? At school.
Yeah.
Also note that 64% is actually insufficient to attain a supermajority vote, according to most CC&Rs. So if you wanted to amend your CC&Rs, it's always said, well, you have to have a 67 to 75% supermajority has to vote for it. Well, we don't even have a supermajority of their respondents saying that their overall impression of living in their HOA is a positive experience. So what do you think of that?
I think it's all a bunch of nonsense. I think that if you notice, every time there's a really big horror story that mm-hmm. comes out, somebody's embezzled $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, somebody's been abused, somebody's been shot, any time an old lady's been evicted and her right. household, and every time there's something really horrific, CAI trots out with yet another one of their surveys. I mean, this is, everybody's so happy, you know, let's just take the limelight away from the horrors. If they had half a brain, Deborah, they would make sure that the horrors stopped, because ultimately it's the horrors that are going to bring them down.
Well, one of the interesting things is when you go and look at who did they actually survey? That's an interesting thing to research. I wanted to find out how did they arrive at these opinions and who actually answered this survey. If you go back and look at the history, and all of this is on the document that I sent you, they've been doing this roughly every 2 years. The most recent survey from 2014, where I just quoted you the 64% positive rating, 26% neutral, which means that they're sitting on the fence. If they had a better option, they'd leave, in my opinion. That came from public opinion surveys. Public Opinion Strategies is the name of the company. They do surveying, basically survey and research for mostly people who are running for political office. And this particular survey was an online survey, and all of the people who participated self-selected. In other words, they agreed to participate in online surveys. Therefore, it's not a randomized sample. It's not necessarily a representative sample of all people who live in HOAs and condominiums. For example, if you look at CAI's information as to, they have statistics as to how many associations there are, and at the bottom of it says that about half of them are HOAs, maybe about 38% to 40%, 45% are condominiums, and a small percentage, less than 5% or 6%, are cooperatives. And when you look at the sample, which I also got to see on the sample, how did the percentages break down? The percentages broke down very differently. It was something like 60% or 70% of the respondents lived in HOAs. And a smaller percent than what's representative were in the condominiums. So the figures didn't track. I don't have it in front of me, the exact figures, but I have the exact figures on the document that I sent you earlier. So when you have people that are self-selecting themselves, they're not going to necessarily be representative of the sample. But one of the two of the things that stuck out to me the most when I was looking at the management report, and this part was not released in the public news release. There were questions that were asked of the respondents. In your community, have you ever attended any community association board meetings? Guess what percentage have attended community association board meetings according to the results of this survey?
Tell us.
70%. 70%. And another question, do you currently have, or have you in the past, served on a homeowners association or condominium board? Well, the results indicate 20% or 1 in 5 residents have served on a board at one time. Now,
that's the apathy that we're seeing.
All we ever hear about is how apathetic people are, right? All of these forums that I've been listening to, listening in on, participating in, reading about, everybody always complains, the managers, the attorneys always complain, nobody wants to run for the board, nobody shows up for the meeting, only a handful of people. You know, the other owners that I've heard from and talked to said the same thing. you know, I have this concern and I try to get some of my neighbors to come to the board meeting and they really don't want to get involved, and I go there and there's only a handful of us neighbors there. I mean, if 70%, I lived in an HOA that had over 1,000, let's say 1,000 units, which is equates to maybe 2,000 plus residents. If 70% of the people ever went to a meeting, they would never fit in the room that's allotted for the meeting.
Yeah, I know.
Even if 10% went, they wouldn't fit in the room. So this alone makes me question, you know, just based upon the sample, if these are people who basically have spent time on a board, spent time with the board in board meetings, and have actually served on a board, perhaps their answers may be skewed more positive than negative. So if you're going back to looking at the 60% that said they rate their overall experience as positive, now you have to wonder, is that 64% artificially high based upon the sample, or is it valid?
I don't think that these surveys are valid, and I'll be honest with you, the people that I have spoken to, even the legislators, don't believe them. They just sort of shrug their shoulders. The first time that they did this was back in 1998, 99, and it was a tag-on survey. They talked to 101 people, and at the time when the survey came out, they had rented the National Press Center downtown and put on this big dog and pony show, and I was doing another show before that, and I had Bob Diamond on the next day, and he's talking about this, and I said, yeah, but Bob, you know, CAI's been lamenting the fact that people don't want to run for the board, they don't want to get involved, and they're afraid that the whole system's going to collapse. I said, yet when you look at the survey results, it says that, you know, again, something like 70% of the homeowners actually attend the meetings. And so he distanced, oh, it's just a cheap little survey, and, you know, he kind of backed away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, none of this makes any sense.
Right.
There's a whole lot of absolute gibberish and nonsense that goes on. Plus, as you were talking, there's another major, major point that we keep forgetting. People are terrified. People are scared to death of their associations, and I don't think I'm exaggerating this. I hear from a lot of them. So imagine you're sitting there at home and somebody calls you and says, I want to talk about your HOA, and
right.
Do you like it? I mean, if people are that terrified, do you think they're going to be honest about it?
Well, they don't even answer the phone, Shu, because what happens is you know, this last survey was an online survey, so they kind of sidestepped the issue of actually having to pick up the phone and call from a calling list. But the previous surveys that were done by Zogby and IBOPE were telephone surveys that were done from CDs. So they would get these CD directories by zip code, and they would try to make them representative across the country and race and income level and all of these other factors, and that in and of itself is extremely difficult to do. Again, all of the details are in the file that will be uploaded. But there was a study that was done in 2003 by a market research company that found that 93% of cold calls in surveys never get completed for one reason or another. Either the people don't pick up. Everybody has caller ID these days, right? A lot of people have a cell phone these days. As soon as they see a number on there that they don't recognize or something they don't want to answer, they won't pick up. Of the people who do pick up, there's a certain amount of people that will a few people will answer the survey, but a lot of people will, as soon as you find out it's a survey, you want to hang up. Especially if you find out, like you said, Shu, they're calling about your HOA. Well, if you have a negative experience with your HOA, are you going to talk to somebody and answer questions?
You don't know who's on the other end. I mean,
you
they
don't
can
even know who they are.
It might be a board member.
It might be a collection agency.
Yeah. It could be anybody. You know? So what are you going to say? No, I hate my HOA. They're going to, we're coming to get you. We're coming to take you away. Ah.
I mean, technically, when they're collecting all of this data, it's supposed to remain anonymous. But as the person who's sitting on the other end with the ringing phone, you may not know that. So the percentage of people that actually answer the survey is going to be very small. And even if you started with a representative list to begin with, by the time you whittle it down to the few people that are willing to talk to the person doing the survey on the other end of the line, is the sample going to be representative? Probably not. You're probably going to get people who, you know, think everything is wonderful, or they have friends on the board, or, you know, they've had kind of a neutral experience all along. Or conversely, you may get a few people who had a very bad experience, and they're going to be wanting to talk about it. But as you said, most people aren't going to want to discuss.
Deborah, have you ever had someone call you up and it's a survey? And so you say, yeah, I'll be happy to answer your survey. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell me, what is your favorite color? Is it black? Is it white? Or is it red? Well, actually, it's turquoise. No. I don't have turquoise on the list. It's got to be black, it's got to be white, or it's got to be red. But it's none of those. I don't have that on my list. So therefore, you either pick one of those usually they push you to answer one of them. So you pick out of those three, you pick one. Then the survey results come out with, oh, well, you know, this is overwhelmingly these people, you know, people's favorite color is red or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
I mean, it's not a true survey in the sense that people actually get to give you information. It's you've got to pick. There's a very limited menu.
Right. They call those
push pulls.
Well, and there's another name for certain questions. They're called leading questions or loaded questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example of one here. One question that was asked was, do you think the members of your elected governing board, this is assuming they're actually elected, of your elected governing board serve the best interests of your community as a whole? Here's your answer choices. Yes, absolutely. Yes, for the most part. No, not at all. So right there you have three answers that are not balanced, Shu. You have two positive answers, one very positive, one just regular positive, and one negative. So you're already led to believe, as the person answering the question subconsciously, that no is definitely the wrong answer. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So the actual results were 36% said yes, absolutely, 54% said yes for the most part, and only 10% said no, not at all. But when you start with the question like that, who is really going to answer no?
Well, we're out of time, Deborah, but I just want to point out very, very quickly the educational levels. You said that the educational levels of the people who responded to the CAI survey far exceeded national averages.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. It just totally doesn't make sense. Deborah, I want to thank you so much for coming on and doing this and for the paper you wrote. It is incredible. And I'm so glad that when you got out of your HOA, you didn't really get out of the HOA. You stayed with us.
Well, I'm hoping that the information can help educate and enlighten, you know, the general public not just people who live in homeowners associations or own homes, but also the tenants and others as well.
That's the idea behind the show. Thank you so very much, Deborah.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.